Gustav Klimt painted images of dreamy women on gold-patterned backgrounds. Paintings such as The Kiss and the Beethoven Frieze became icons of turn-of-the-century Vienna. Decades later, they're popular images for posters, T-shirts, and coffee mugs. In North America, there never has been a retrospective of Klimt's entire career. A show is opened at the National Gallery of Canada in Ottawa without some of the artist's most famous paintings. Some of those are being claimed by the heirs of Jews who fled Nazi-occupied Austria. David Darcy reports.
Early sections of murals by the young Klimt remind visitors to Ottawa that he was the son of a goldsmith who trained at a vocational school as a decorative painter. Early portraits show his skill as a draftsman and the influence of Impressionism, which was frowned on in Austria as a foreign style. The artist worked mostly on government projects until the erotic and morbid figures in his murals got him into trouble and forced him to seek out private patrons. Many of them were Jewish, and they were drawn to Klimt's images of love and death in the city where Sigmund Freud built his theory of psychoanalysis around dreams and repressed sexuality. Exhibition curator Colin Bailey says at the same time Klimt was painting society portraits, he was making hundreds of pornographic drawings of his models.
Similar drawings were done by Picasso, similar drawings were actually done by Rodin. And he may well have seen drawings by Rodin that, in a way, opened that door for him. But they become very much a hallmark of early 20th century Viennese art. And, of course, his greatest pupil, Schiele, takes them even further and, in some ways, even more shockingly direct. I think, in a way, it was a moment of a sort of massive liberation in Viennese art, one aspect of which Klimt takes beyond what was sort of until then acceptable even in the most advanced circles. And I think that aspect of his art still has the capacity to shock today. And you can't really do a Klimt exhibition without considering that component.
90 of those drawings are in the show with an advisory. For art historians, Bailey says, Klimt's been hard to classify and often overlooked in favor of French and German artists. Some critics have scorned him as an unoriginal decorator who borrowed gold leaf from old masters and lavish patterns from Egyptian objects. Colin Bailey says that's not why people line up to see his work.
He is able to capture erotic bliss in a way that perhaps no other artist since or after has done. And what he does that no one else does, perhaps Picasso does it, Matisse does it at a moment, is capture something oddly timeless about the nature of erotic attraction, the nature of sensual satisfaction, the fiction of the perfect physical moment. And I wonder if he's not perhaps the first artist to do that, and that may be why his iconic pictures still seem to us to vibrate with a sort of authenticity that would not be the case perhaps of much symbolist art today.
The centerpiece of the exhibition is a painting that stands between Klimt's large canvases of women enveloped in gold and jewel patterns and the graphic studio chronicle of the man who fathered at least 14 illegitimate children with some of those models. It's a painting called Hope One, a nude pregnant girl standing in profile against a murky background with her face turned toward the viewer. Above her are four spectral faces, one of them a skull. This famous Klimt work was bought by the National Gallery of Canada in 1970, but most other well-known Klimts never made it into the show. Klimt's masterpiece, The Kiss, did not leave Vienna, nor did the portrait of Adela Bloch-Bauer, Klimt's gold-leaf painting of a Viennese Jewish socialite. The official reason is because the painting was too fragile to travel. Unofficially, the Austrians feared police might seize it. Adela Bloch-Bauer's heirs now live in the U.S. and Canada. They say the Nazis looted the portrait from her husband in 1939. They've been trying to get it and five other Klimts worth about $150 million back from the Austrian gallery in Vienna. The Austrians say Adela Bloch-Bauer, Klimt's patron and perhaps his lover, willed the pictures to the museum in 1923. In May, a federal judge in Los Angeles approved the heir's petition to sue the museum and the Austrian government in the United States to get the paintings back. The family's lawyer, Randall Schoenberg, says his clients are not to blame for the Austrians' reluctance to lend the portrait.
We have no interest in stopping the paintings from being exhibited. Our only interest, and the heirs' only interest, is in recovering them. We've always been interested in a fair resolution of the matter that would allow the issue of Adela's will, for example, to be decided by a neutral person. But it's really the Austrians who have brought this on themselves by being recalcitrant and not dealing with the restitution issue, refusing to speak with us and refusing to resolve the matter.
Lawyers for the Austrian government say the case should be tried where the paintings are, in Vienna, and they're appealing the ruling. The National Gallery of Canada is downplaying any gaps in its retrospective, and curators say any exhibition of Picasso or Matisse will also lack major works that owners are reluctant to lend because they're simply too valuable. That wasn't always the case with Klimt or his Viennese pupil Egon Schiele, but today their paintings are worth millions, says Jane Collier, whose New York gallery loaned works to Ottawa and who wrote an essay for the show's catalog.
Now, Klimt and Schiele have arrived, and whether one museum more or less does a show of their work really does not make that much difference, because the fact is that their work already is so scarce on the market that if you get a great Klimt or a great Schiele oil painting, you can sell it. You don't need the National Gallery of Canada to help you out.
Museums didn't always feel that way. Klimt was excluded from the progression in modern art history the same way that he was ignored by the international market until at least the 1960s. As his prices have risen, says curator Colin Bailey, so has the consideration of his importance.
Klimts were hard. I'm not sure they were hard to give away, but they were certainly not on the wish list of institutions, and they certainly did not sit easily with a progression that led from the Impressionists, Post-Impressionists, Picasso, Matisse, Cubism, etc., etc. And I think in that way, interest in Klimt and in his world just reminds us that any progression can never be as linear and as complete as a textbook suggests.
The exhibition Gustav Klimt, The Making of Modernism, will not travel. It's on view in Ottawa through mid-September. For NPR News, I'm David Darcy.